Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is where we take your stack of sources, your articles, research notes, and really figure out what's essential. Today, we're digging into some really foundational economic ideas. We're guided specifically by the material you shared, focusing on chapter 2.4.
That's right. We've got your notes, your summaries here, and they lay out a pretty clear path for understanding, you know, the basic mechanics of how markets actually work, especially looking at supply and demand.
Exactly. So our mission today is to unpack this specific material. We want to pull out the key insights it offers on, well, market equilibrium, how these shifts happen, the sometimes surprising ways markets connect, and the absolutely vital role price plays in all of this.
Yeah, it's about getting you up to speed quickly on the core ideas driving the prices and quantities you see every day.
Think of it like lifting the hood on the economic engine.
And using your material as the sort of technical guide.
Okay, so let's dive in. Your notes put market equilibrium right at the top.
Yes, the source material talks about equilibrium as basically that point of balance in a market. It's where the amount of something buyers want, well, it exactly matches the amount sellers are willing to supply.
Right. And at that exact point, the market clears. You get an equilibrium price and an equilibrium quantity.
Mm-hmm.
Graphically, as your notes show us, it's just where those demand and supply curves cross, assuming, you know, nothing else changes for a second.
Correct. And the source really emphasizes that markets naturally tend towards this balance. So if the price is, say, above equilibrium,
then you've got more supply than demand.
A surplus, yeah. Like too many sweaters left on the rack after winter, maybe.
Good example.
And your notes say this surplus puts downward pressure on the price. Sellers start competing to get rid of that extra stock.
Okay, and the flip side, if the price is below equilibrium,
then demand outstrips supply. That's a shortage.
Ah, like the crazy rush for that must-have toy at Christmas when the shelves are totally bare.
Exactly that. So now buyers are competing for the few items available, and that bigs the price up. Your material really highlights this price mechanism. Prices falling in a surplus, rising in a shortage as the market's kind of automatic adjustment system.
Guiding it back towards that equilibrium point.
Precisely.
So equilibrium is this stable point where the market kind of wants to rest.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, markets are never really static, are they? They're constantly being pushed around.
Uh-huh.
Which brings us neatly to shifts in demand and supply.
Right. And this is where things get dynamic. Your notes are really clear here. A shift in demand or supply is totally different from just moving along one of the curves because the price changed.
Okay.
A shift means the whole relationship between price and quantity has changed. It's because of some factor other than the price of the good itself.
Right. Like an increase in demand. Your material says that means consumers want more of the good at every single price.
Yep. The whole demand curve shifts to the right on the graph.
And when that happens?
Well, your notes point out the market finds a new equilibrium. It settles at a higher price and a higher quantity gets traded.
Okay, and if demand decreases, shifts left.
Then both the equilibrium price and the quantity will fall.
Makes sense. And the material you provided lists the usual suspects causing these demand shifts.
Yeah.
Things like changes in income.
Right, and it distinguishes between normal goods you buy more when you're richer and inferior goods, which you actually buy less of as income rises.
Interesting. Then there are changes in tastes, preferences, what people expect prices to do later.
Uh-huh. Expectations are key.
Population changes, and a really big one, changes in the prices of related goods.
Yeah, substitutes and complements. We'll probably circle back to those.
Definitely. Yeah. But it's not just demand shifting, right? Supply shifts, too.
Absolutely. The supply curve can shift for reasons totally unrelated to the good's own current price. An increase in supply, maybe production gets cheaper.
Yeah.
That shifts the curve to the right. And it leads to a lower equilibrium price, but a higher quantity.
Okay. Lower price, higher quantity, and a decrease in supply. Curve shifts left.
That means a higher equilibrium price and a lower quantity traded.
And your notes list the drivers here, too. Things like production costs, changing labor, materials.
Big ones. Also, technological advances that make production easier or cheaper.
Uh-huh. Government actions like taxes or subsidies play a role.
Definitely. Natural conditions, think weather for crops. And also, the price of other things a producer could be making instead.
Right. Opportunity costs.
Exactly. Your notes also mention the tricky situation when both curves shift at the same time.
Ah, yes. Like if both demand and supply increase.
Right. The material points out that you might know for sure what happens to quantity, like If both increase, quantity definitely goes up. But the effect on price...
It's ambiguous.
It's ambiguous. It depends on how much each curve shifts relative to the other. Your notes rightly say you often need the diagrams to really see what's going on there.
Yeah, those graphs really help visualize how those forces balance out. And speaking of things working together, your material makes another crucial point. Markets aren't islands. They're connected.
This is fascinating stuff, exploring how different goods and services relate to each other. Your notes mention joint demand, first often called demand for complements.
Right, goods used together, like cars and tires is classic, or maybe based on an example sort of hinted at your notes, like streaming services and high-speed internet.
Good one, yeah.
So if the price of streaming goes way up, maybe people cut back, and that in turn could reduce the demand for high-speed internet, right? Even if the internet price itself didn't change.
Exactly. The demand curve for internet would shift left in that case.
Yeah. Okay, then there's alternative demand, which covers substitutes.
Yeah, goods that basically do the same job. Your material might suggest things like, I don't know, different brands of coffee, maybe.
Right.
Or bus travel versus train travel.
Right, so if bus fares go up, some people might switch to the train instead.
Uh-huh. Increasing the demand for train travel, that shifts the train demand curve to the right.
Okay. Your notes also flag derived demand. That sounds important, especially for factor markets like labor or materials.
It's critical. Derived demand means the demand for an input, like steel, comes from the demand for the final product it helps make, like cars.
Ah, I see. The source uses that classic steel and cars example. So if demand for cars shoots up globally,
then car makers need more steel. That increases the demand for steel itself, shifting its demand curve right, even if nothing changed about steel production initially.
Got it. And the last one mentioned is joint supply.
Right. This is when producing one good automatically means you produce another as a byproduct.
Like refining crude oil. Your material uses that example. You don't just get gasoline. You also get heating oil, jet fuel, other stuff.
Exactly. So if there's, say, a technological improvement in oil refining, like mentioned in the chapter supply factors, that increases the supply of crude processing, it would boost the supply of all those joint products at the same time. Their supply curves all shift right.
Wow. So understanding these links, complements, substitutes, derived demand, joint supply is really key because, as your notes show, a change in just one market can send ripples, sometimes big ones, through others.
It really can. And coordinating all these interactions, the equilibrium, the shifts, these market links, that all comes down to one central player.
Price. Which brings us to the really central role price plays in this whole market system. Your source material spends a good amount of time on this, laying out three essential jobs price does.
Three key functions in allocating scarce resources in a market economy. The first is the rationing function.
Price is ration. Okay, how does that work?
Well, when something's scarce, its price tends to go up, right?
Right.
That higher price acts like a gatekeeper. It makes sure the limited supply goes to the buyers who value it most highly, or at least are most willing and able to pay that higher price.
So it allocates based on purchasing power. Your notes mention how this works, sometimes quite harshly, like with essentials after a disaster when prices spike.
Exactly right. It stops the whole stock being bought up instantly at the old low price. Okay, second function, signaling.
Prices send signals.
Powerful signals. A rising price tells consumers, hey, this is getting scarcer or more popular. Maybe they conserve or look for alternatives.
Yeah.
And crucially, it signals to producers, hey, there's profit to be made here. It encourages them to supply more or maybe even enter the market.
And a falling price signals the opposite.
The opposite. Maybe there's a glut or demand is dropping. It tells producers, maybe scale back production here.
So it's like the market's communication network, passing info about scarcity and preferences back and forth.
Without needing any central planner, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty efficient that way. And the signaling directly leads to the third role, incentivizing.
Prices create incentives. Makes sense.
Yes. Higher prices give producers an incentive to make more. The potential reward is bigger.
And lower prices.
They give consumers an incentive to buy more because it costs less. Your notes really highlight how this incentive function is what makes supply and demand actually respond to price changes. It's what drives the market towards, hopefully, a more efficient outcome where resources go where they're most wanted.
So price isn't just a static number on a tag. It's this active force rationing things out, signaling vital information, and creating the incentives that guide what buyers and sellers actually do.
Yeah.
It keeps the whole market engine turning over and adjusting.
That's a great way to put it. It's the dynamic coordinator that helps sort out all those shifts and connections we talked about, always nudging markets back towards balance, even if that balance point itself is always moving.
Okay, so this deep dive, using your material from Chapter 2.4, has given us, a really solid grip on these core mechanics. We've covered how markets find that equilibrium balance.
That temporary balance.
The specific non-price factors your notes detailed that cause demand and supply curves to shift and upset that balance.
Right, the why behind the shifts.
The kind of web of connections between markets, complements, substitutes, derived demand, joint supply.
Those ripple effects.
And crucially, those three big jobs price does. Rationing, signaling, and incentivizing, all to manage scarcity and guide resources.
Yeah, really grasping these principles as laid out in your source material. It's fundamental. It's how you start to make sense of why prices and quantities move the way they do in the real world.
Absolutely. Okay, so for you, our listener, here's a final thought to take away from this deep dive, building on what we've discussed from the sources. Think about a big price change you've noticed recently. Something you buy or use, could be gas, could be coffee, maybe a piece of tech, anything. Now, considering everything we've unpacked from your material, how many of those demand shift factors, income, tastes, expectations, related goods prices, and how many supply shift factors, costs, technology, maybe government action, might be hitting that market all at the same time?
It's rarely just one thing, is it?
Rarely. And then think about how that new price, the one you observed, is doing its work right now. How is it rationing who gets the product? What signals is it sending to you, other consumers, and the producers? And what incentives is it creating for future decisions about making and buying that product? Something to chew on.